Book of Luke. Luke chapter 15. As you're turning there, I remind you that, as already mentioned, the group number 4 will meet tonight. That's high school through age 25. And that group's a little different than the rest. It's not by the letter of your name, but high school through age 25. I hope you enjoy and appreciate the reading of those reports that Evan has given to us. The elders have asked him to do that, and I appreciate him doing that. Sometimes in listening to that, we pay a little attention to that, but this is exactly what they did in Acts 14. In Acts, the 14th chapter, Paul and Barnabas, having finished their missionary journey, came back and gathered the church together, and the text says that they reported all that was with them. And so they gave a report of the work in other places that they had part in, and that's what Evan's doing for us, and we appreciate him doing that. And hope you're paying close attention, because that's fellowship you're having with these men. 5 different men helping support. And that's not the work of the elders, that's the work of this church. And so hope you're paying close attention to those. Let's turn to Luke 15 now, if you haven't already. We've been studying through the parables on Sunday evening, and we want to look at 3 parables that are closely related. And these are 3 parables on the value of the lost in Luke chapter 15. There are 3 related parables. There is the parable of the lost sheep, verses 3 to 7. There is verses 8 through 10. Those 3 verses are devoted to the lost coin. The bulk of the chapter, verses 11 to 24, deal with the lost son. Actually, on through verse 32, actually. All these parables are prompted by an attitude of the Pharisees that's seen in verses 1 and 2. So let's take a look at verses 1 and 2. Here's what prompted the parables. It always is important to look at the context to see what might have prompted those discussions and the teaching. The text says, "Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to hear him, and the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, 'This man receives sinners.'" That was not a compliment. That was a criticism they had made. They had ignored his effort to teach the sinner. But the charge was that he runs with that crowd. That's what they're trying to say. They see Jesus with the sinners and relating to those who are the sinners, the publicans and the sinners, and their charge basically is he runs with that crowd. He's part of them. Birds of a feather flock together after all. The Pharisees saw no value in the publicans and the sinners. No value in even talking to them or giving any consideration to them, which Jesus had done. William Taylor said, "The parables in this chapter are 3, but the purpose pervading them is 1. They were all designed to show the Pharisees how unlike God they are in the spirit which they manifested when they taunted Jesus with the reception of sinners. And so, they all illustrate that is in heaven over the penitent's return to God." Trent said, "More than this, he warns them that if they indulge in the proud self-righteousness, there will be more joy in heaven over one of the penitents whom they despise than over the 99 of such as yourselves." Now that must have hurt these Pharisees when Jesus is making the point that you think these are lowly sinners over here and I'm spending time with these lowly sinners. And I want to tell you that heaven's going to rejoice if one of those repent more over them than he will over you. And therein is part of the point of the text. Let's begin by noticing some comparison and contrast between the parables. There's a great deal of comparison between the 3 parables, and we'll give consideration to all 3. But first of all, each of them have the same elements. By that, I simply mean something was lost in each one of these. We'll read the parables in a moment. But there is a lost sheep, there is a lost coin, and there is a lost son. So something is lost in each one of those. But not only that, there is the grief of the loser, that is, the one who lost something. That is, the shepherd who lost the sheep, the woman who lost the coin, and the father who lost his son. Furthermore, there is something similar in the search. In each case, there is a search that's given out. That is, the shepherd goes searching for the sheep, the woman searches and sweeps the house for the coin, the father is looking every day for his son to return, according to verse 20. There is the joy over restoration that is similar. That is, the shepherd, when he finds the sheep, is joyous over what he found, the woman over finding the coin, and the father over the son. So they're similar in that regard. There is something similar about how each was lost. In the first, there is the sheep that was lost through his own carelessness. That is, the sheep wandered away carelessly and becomes lost. The coin was lost through someone's misplacing it, carelessness again. And then the third case, you have the son that was lost through his own free choice and his own carelessness as he goes astray and does whatever he wants to do. Taylor, as I've quoted quite frequently in the parables, says that thus one in purpose, these parables are different in details. There are some differences in these. So let's talk about the contrast between these. There is a difference in the search. How so? In the first two, that is in the coin and in the sheep, the focus is on God's search for the lost, as he searching after the sheep, seeking after the coin, which demonstrates God goes and seeks after those that are lost. But in the last of those, the focus seems to be more on the result of the divine search. Was the Father searching? Yes, that's mentioned at verse 20. But it seems to focus more on the result of the divine search, of his coming home and being in his returning and the great joy that was celebrated over that. More about that in a moment. There is a difference in the heart, in the focus of the heart. What do we mean by that? Well, in the first two, the coin and the sheep, the starting point seems to be the heart of God and the yearning for what was lost. Yearning for the sheep, yearning for the coin that is of great value. In the last, the starting point seems to be the heart, this time, of the sinner. The focus on his departure, the attitude that he had, his degradation, how far he went, and then his heart caused him to return. Then he came to himself, verse 17. There is a difference in ownership and responsibility. In the first and the last, the focus is on my sheep and my son, which was lost. My son was dead and was lost. My sheep was lost. In the second, the focus is on the piece that I lost, where the owner took responsibility that I lost that, which is not true of the first and in the last. So there's a difference. There's also a difference in the progressive nature of the parable. Now, this is interesting to me, as Trench made this observation. He said the possessor of 100 sheep is some sort of a rich man. That he was not likely to feel the loss of a single sheep so deeply as the woman who, out of 10 small pieces of money, should lose one. And her feelings would come infinitely short of the parental affection of a father who, having two sons, should behold one of them going astray. And thus we find ourselves moving even narrower and even more intenser circles of hope and fear and love, drawing thus nearer to the innermost center and heart of the truth. And so here you have a man who has 100 sheep. Yes, he loses one sheep, but that doesn't hurt like the woman losing one of her 10 precious coins. But that's nothing like the value of losing the one of two sons who has gone astray. And so there is a difference in those parables. So now let's focus on the first of those parables, beginning at verse 3 through verse 7, and we'll read Luke 15, verses 3 through 7. Luke chapter 15, beginning at verse 3. Here is the parable of the lost sheep. And so he spoke a parable to them. Remember what prompted that in verse 2. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he loses one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and goes after him, the one that was lost, until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I found my sheep which was lost." And I say to you that likewise there will be more joy over heaven over one sinner who repents than over the 99 just persons who need no repentance. I want to start at verse 7. At verse 7, Jesus makes the application that what I'm talking about is the value of the lost. We'll see the same thing again that's at verse 10, and we'll see the same thing again in the parable of the lost son. Well, let's talk about the sheep. Let's focus on the sheep just for a moment. The sheep was a wandering sheep. And by that I simply mean it was because of his carelessness that he went astray. This was a wandering sheep that went astray through his carelessness. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 2. We're going to make some parallels throughout and not just talk about the parable itself. But in that there is some application to the sinner that goes astray according to Jesus himself. So let's turn to Hebrews chapter 2 and in verse 3. We often could become wandering sheep, and we do so through our own carelessness. The warning given in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 1, that we ought to give them earnest heed to the things that we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip or drift away. But he words it this way at verse 3, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? Through neglect and carelessness, we can drift away and we can become like this wandering sheep. Not only was this a wandering sheep, but this was a lost sheep. He was away from the shepherd, he was away from the fold, and therefore he was lost. A lost person is always away from his God. We noted this morning in Isaiah 59 verses 1 and 2 that their sins have separated you from your God. So anytime one goes astray away from God, he is a lost sheep. Not only was it a wandering sheep, but he was a lonely sheep, because he's off by himself and all alone. He's not with the fold. He's not with the flock. He's not with any others. And I learned from that that simply that those who are lost are without God, and they're without Christ, and they're without hope. Paul mentions in Ephesians chapter 2 that those who are astray from God, talking about the alien sinner, talking about Gentiles, by the way, in that passage, that they are without hope and without God and without Christ in the world. And so those who are astray are lonely sheep. They're out in the world without God and without Christ and without hope. Not only was he a wandering sheep and a lost sheep and a lonely sheep, he was a helpless sheep. A sheep is one of the most helpless animals of all animals, and defenseless. That's why they need a shepherd. He's unable to help himself, particularly if he becomes cast, which means he's upside down and he can't be turned over so that he gets back on his feet. And so they're helpless sheep, especially by himself. And so the point of that is that God's people, when they go astray, the sinner is helpless without God. You're helpless without God. You can't help yourself. And therefore, you're like the helpless sheep. But I want to turn and focus on the shepherd now. We focused on the kind of sheep that is mentioned here. What about the shepherd? Well, he's a watchful shepherd for the simple reason that he's ever mindful of the fold. He's constantly looking for the fold and looking at what's taking place with reference to the fold. He takes note of the individual sheep. He doesn't just look at the flock as a whole and recognizes my flock is here, but he recognizes the individual sheep that is missing from the flock. And so when one is missing, he knows it. He knows what's taking place with the reference to the sheep going astray. John chapter 10, let's turn to John chapter 10, where Jesus talks about being the good shepherd of the fold. In John 10 and verse 14, he said, I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and I'm known by my own. And so he's a watchful shepherd, constantly watching for those who are his sheep. This shepherd was a sorrowful shepherd in this sense, because it was his sheep, it was his loss. This is his flock. This is his shepherd. I mean, this is his sheep. And it was one of his that went astray, for he's a sorrowful shepherd. Because he has pity and care and concern for the sheep, he knows the plight of the lonely sheep. He thinks about what it feels like to be the lonely sheep, and he goes seeking after him. Which brings us to another point concerning the shepherd, that he was a seeking shepherd. That is, he leaves the 99 to go seek the lost. Jesus came for that purpose. We read in Luke chapter 19 and verse 10 that he came to seek and to save that which was lost. Notice that he freely seeks. He's not a hireling or a slave that is being forced to go, but he willingly leaves the 99 and goes and seeks after that which is lost. And so he's a seeking shepherd. He persistently seeks. Go back to Luke chapter 15 if you've left there, and go back to Luke 15, and I want you to notice in verse 4 that he will go after the one that was lost until he finds it. He doesn't go and begin to search for a little while and then he gives up, and then go search a little more and then give up, but he goes seeks until he finds it. But this is also a successful shepherd. He is a watchful shepherd. He is a sorrowful shepherd. He's seeking shepherd, but he's a successful shepherd. How so? Well, notice at verse 5, and when he found it, he lays it on his shoulders rejoicing. He recovers it. He goes and he finds it. He brings it back and he recovers it. He does so with tenderness and not with harshness. Rather than being harsh upon the sheep that's gone astray, notice the text says at verse 5 that he lays it on his shoulder, showing that he's tender and he cares and he's kind. And he does so with joy. Look at verse 6 and verse 7. Then when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I found my sheep that was lost. And then Jesus makes the application that I say to you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over the 99 just persons who need no repentance. That's the parable of the lost sheep. The point and answer to the description that the Pharisees gave concerning Jesus, he runs with the crowd of sinners, that we ought to have interest in the one that is lost, the value of the lost. That's the point, the value of those who are lost. Now let's talk about the lost coin in verses 8 through 10. And what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she found it, she calls her friends and neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I found the piece which I lost. Likewise, I say to you, there is joy in heaven in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Let's talk about the lost coin. Let's talk about the coin itself that was lost. This was not a base coin, but a coin of precious metal. Your footnote has something about used by married women and put in a garment. But be that as it may, it was a precious metal. Often the coins would bear the image of a king. Remember Jesus, when he was asked about paying tribute, he said, whose image is upon it? And they said, Caesar's. It was the image of the king. Perhaps there's a point to be made from that. What I learned from that is that the sinner, like unto the coin, has value. This coin has value. This was not a base coin, but it's a coin of precious metal, a valuable coin. It bears the image of the king. And so I learned from that the sinner is a precious soul. The sinner has great value. We are born in the image of God. That is, we are made in the image of God in Genesis 1 and in verse 27. We see the same thing in Acts chapter 17. And that makes them of value because they're in the image of God. Well, let's talk about the fact that not only is there a coin of value, but this was a lost coin. This coin was lost by the owner. She said, look at verse 9, rejoice for I have found the piece which I lost. I don't know if that means that she bore responsibility. Maybe it did. We hinted at that a little bit earlier. It may suggest that she lost it in the sense that it's misplaced. It's just gone. But whatever the case, it was lost by the owner. She doesn't have it anymore. It's also lost from the owner. Lost by the owner, lost from the owner. And while it's out of circulation, it is worthless. It doesn't matter what value it has. If it was worth $1,000 or $10,000 or a penny, whatever it was worth, it is of no value while it's lost. It's of no value to her while it's lost until she has found it. And so here's what I learned from that by application concerning the wayward child of God or the one who is not a child of God, the lost. They're lost by the Lord and His people, meaning they're not with the Lord. And they're lost from the Lord and His people and His church. And while out of circulation, we are of value. And so whatever value that we bear, we become of no value while we're away from the Lord, until we come back to the Lord, like the coin that indeed has been found. But let's talk a little about the anxiety over the coin. Let's talk about the anxiety over the coin. There was an earnest search for the coin because of its value. What do we mean, an earnest search? All available means were used. Look at verse 8. She lit the lamp and she swept the house and she sought diligently until she finds it. Until she finds it. That is, she uses a lamp, she uses a broom. Whatever means are available that she might find that coin. But I want to suggest to you this was a diligent search. Notice again at verse 10, the verse 8, that she sought diligently until she finds it. She looks for it, and then she looks for it, and she looks for it some more. Her broom, she gets her lamp. She sweeps in this corner, she sweeps in that corner until she finds it. Now I learned from that that God doesn't give up. When everyone goes astray, God doesn't give up on them. His word is still powerful. It's still working. God's still seeking. God's still looking. God's still caring. And the people of God shouldn't give up on them either. There's the anxiety over the coin. Let's talk about the recovery of the coin. Verse 10. In verse 10, she found what was lost. Or verse 9, excuse me. She found what was lost. And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together. And so there is joy over the successful search. It has no comparison at all. Now she's excited because she's found it. The joy is shared with others. And you see the value and the importance of one. That one coin is of value. Now she still had all the other nine, but this one is of value. And we're learning about the value of the lost. In answer to verse 2. Now I want to spend the rest of our time talking about the lost son. We're more familiar with that than perhaps the other two. And this gets at the thrust in the heart of what Jesus is talking about in the value of the lost. So let's begin at verse 11, and I want to go down through verse 24. The story goes on through verse 32. We'll stop at verse 24. Because this really focuses on the lost son. Beginning at the rest of that, and we'll deal with that a little bit later in another study, we'll talk about the older brother. But let's talk about 11 to 24. And a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that fall to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. And when he had spent all, there arose a great famine, and the land began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine, and he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. And when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I'll say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired servants. And then he arose and came to his father, and while he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and no longer worthy to be called your son. The father said, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and bring a ring and put it on his hand, and sandals on his feet. And bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again, was lost and is found. And they begin to be merry. Here we have the story of the lost son, but I want to look at this lost son in his departure first of all, his going astray. The other two do not focus so much on, except to imply carelessness that was involved in their going astray, or losing of the coin and losing the sheep. But I want us to focus on, in this parable, more attention is given to his departure than in the other two. Let's focus upon him in his departure, beginning at verse 11 through verse 13. First of all, I want to notice his request at verse 12. He went to his father and he said, Father, give me the portion of goods that fall to me, he said. I learned from that he wanted his father's goods, but not his presence. He says, I want what my father can give to me, but I don't want to be with my father. Quite often people are that way. I want what God will give to me, but I don't want to be with God. I don't want to serve God. I don't want to abide with God anymore. I want my father's good, but not his presence. He thought that his liberty would give him some license now, that if he could just go astray, go off into a foreign country, then he's going to go and have some liberty and have some license to behave as he wants to behave. He was blind to how good he had it at home. In fact, he admitted it a little bit later. He didn't realize he's got it made at home. He thought that it would be better in a foreign country, far away from God and far away from home. Things have got to be better, he thought. And so he adds astray. Now I want to talk about the father's response to that now in verse 12. What was the father's response? Well, look at verse 12. So his father divided to them his livelihood. What did the father do? Well, the father gave to both sons. That he gave to the younger son, and it implies that he gave to the other as well. He gave to them his goods. You ask for it, I'll give it to both of you. Seems to be wanting to be fair. That I'll give to one just like I do the other. But here's something else. I learned from that, and that is God gives us our blessings, and he tells us how to use them, and he gives us the freedom of choice. And this young man went away and wasted it, as we're going to see in just a moment. And quite often we do much the same. Let's talk about his journey in verse 13. I see his request, verse 12. The father's response, verse 12. What about his journey? Not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and journeyed to a far country, the text says. In other words, the father let him go. And I want to suggest to you that his father, I suppose, could have forced him to stay. But any force his father would have put upon him wouldn't have changed his will. He would have still had a son at home that wanted to go astray. God's not going to force you and hold you in the sense that you don't have freedom of choice. The Lord will let you go astray. If you want to go astray, the Lord will let you go astray. And I want to notice something else the father didn't do. The father didn't follow him. Father didn't go after him. Didn't mean he wasn't looking for him. We'll get to that in a moment. And what I learned from that is that one who leaves their faithfulness and they go astray, they're leave without their God. God's not going with them. God will let you go astray. God will let you turn your back and walk away. But he's not going after you. He's searching for you, but he's not going with you. And I learned that from this context. Well, I want to talk about his destination now. I saw what he requested. I saw what the father gave him in response. The journey that he made, what about his destination? Well, the text says he went in verse 13 off into a far country. What does that suggest? He went into a foreign land. He went away from the land of his people and the land of his God. He went to a land of license and liberty and unrestrained passion, doing whatever he wanted to do, living how he wants to live. He's away from home, he's away from his father, and he's away from plenty. And therein was his destination. But I want to look at the lost son, not only in his departure, but while he's in the foreign country. Now this picks up at verse 13, part B, through verse 16. How was it in this foreign country? Well, it was wasteful while he was in the foreign country. Look at verse 13. And there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. He was wasteful according to verse 13. He spent all that he had, spent all of his money, spent all of his strength. And what I learned from that is that sin zaps us of all of our powers and all of our strength. James 1 and verse 15. The life of sin is a wasteful life. That's the picture here. He's gone off into sin and that's just a wasteful life. Wasted enough time, Peter said. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 3. Well, while he's in the foreign country, there arose a severe famine, verse 14. And he began to be in want, the text says. This was no ordinary famine. The King James word it is a mighty famine. It was a mighty one. This was a large famine, a severe famine, the text indicates. Frank Cox says that lust allured him and then mocked him. The foreign country was calling for him. And then the foreign country basically made fun of him and mocked him and ridiculed him and turned him into something that he didn't want to be. And I learned that life of sin and luxury and contrary to God is a life of famine. And so it was with this young man. Now let's look at verse 14. He reached near starvation. What do we mean by that? Well, in verse 14 said that he began to be in want. Not only was there a famine, but he began to be in want. Anything of substance is missing. To the point that we'll see in a moment that he was willing to reduce himself to eating the hog's food. We'll get to that in just a second. And I learned that we're starving spiritually when we're away from God. That's the point to be made. He's gone astray and he's starving. Now look at verse 15. I said we'd come to this. That he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country and he sent him into the fields to feed swine. He reaches a point of humiliation. It was the most offensive and vile job for any Jew to be associated with the swine. But he's associated with the swine and he's feeding the swine and he would have eaten the swine's food. He's lost all self-respect while he's away in sin. His actions lead to shame and humiliation. He's doing things that he would never thought about doing as a Jew in his own land. But he's humiliated because of his sin. I want you to notice that verse 16 is loneliness. And when he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods with the swine, no one gave him anything. That's an interesting expression. No one gave him anything. No one bailed him out of his trouble. No one felt sorry for him and come rushing to him. No one offered him food. No one offered him comfort. No one tried to bail him out of his trouble. He was lonely. And I learned something about the loneliness of sin. But here's something else. Let's focus on in his return. Verses 14 to 20. He came back. What did he do? Well, I want you to notice that he made a discovery. We're stopping at verse 16. Now let's pick up at verse 17. The text says, and when he came to himself, he made a discovery. When he came to his senses, when he got some sense about him and realized the foolishness of what he had done in the past. So he made a discovery. But he made a reflection as well. What did he say? He came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger. He remembered better days. He came to himself, came to his senses, made a discovery. He reflected on how it used to be. I remember my better days when I was back at home. Then he made a determination. Look at verse 18. What was the determination? He said, I will arise and I will go to my father and I'll say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. He made a determination. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get up. I'm going to go to my father. I'm going to admit I did wrong. And I'm going to go tell him. What else about his return? He surrendered his pride. Every wayward child of God surrenders their pride when they come back to the Lord. He planned his confession. Here's what he said. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back to my father and tell him I have sinned and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired servants. I'm not going to have the highest place in the household. I just want to be a servant back in this household. First of all of that, notice at verse 20 that his determination turns into action. Verse 20 said, and he arose and came to his father and did exactly what he planned to do. And so we see him in his return. But finally, I want to talk about him in his reception, and the lesson is yours. Look at verse 20 beginning, the latter part, through verse 20. 4, we see the lost son in his reception. First of all, I want you to notice at verse 20 that when he arose and came to his father, but when he was still a great way off, his father saw him. You might underline that. His father saw him. When did he see him? While he was still a great way off. That implies the father had been looking for him. Remember the shepherd going after the sheep? Remember the woman sweeping the house? This is the father searching for his son. While he was still a great way off, his father saw him. He's looking for him to return, expecting him to return, hoping he'll come back home. His father saw him. But his father not only saw him, his father went out and met him. Look at verse 20. That he had compassion on him, and he ran and fell on his neck, and he kissed him. He was eager to accept him. His father didn't greet him at the door and at the gate of the garden and say, "What are you doing here? How come you come back home? Why don't you leave in the first place?" But he ran out him and hugged him, and he kissed him, and he fell on his neck. There's something else about his return. The father embraced him in the sense that he welcomed him back. I see that again at verse 20. He ran out and he hugged his neck and he kissed him. But then I want you to also notice that his father restored him. What do we mean his father restored him? He put a ring on his hand, put a robe upon his back, and put sandals on his feet. That is not the position of a lowly servant. He's giving him a position of honor and extolling him because now his son who was dead is alive, who was lost is now found. And so he restores him. And then the last thing I want you to notice is that the father made him glad. What I mean is father made him glad. Well, look at verse 23 and 24. That he said, "Bring the fatted calf here and kill it and let us eat and be merry. Let's celebrate. You be happy, you celebrate, and I'll celebrate with you. And all the servants will celebrate." What are we celebrating? Verse 24. "My son was dead and he's alive again. He was lost and he is found." And so the lost son came back home. We see the lost son in his departure. We see him in his far journey. We see him as he made his determination to return. And then we see the reception when he got back home. Well, what have we seen in our study? The parables of the value of the lost. Now, we're going to come back to Luke 15 in another study. Talk about some other aspects that we skipped over because we were focusing mainly on the value of the lost. That's the point of these three parables in answer to what the Pharisees said at verse 2. That he eats and dines with sinners. He runs with that crowd. Jesus gives a parable concerning the lost sheep, the lost coin, and then the lost son in answer to their charge of verses 1 and 2. There may be one or more present tonight who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing?